Gormley, Reel 39.
You're coming on leave, and the last thing you mentioned was seeing the cathedral, of course. How many days leave did you get?
One month's leave.
And
after all that time, 1 month.
And the reception when you got home must have been quite something.
Well, it was fantastic, actually, because we got home and we got this train up from King's Cross. And there was a fellow with us called Darby Light, came from Hartlepool, a tug. So we were running a tug and we got off, because I lived in Billingham at the time, and we got off to catch the train from Eaglescliff, because you had to change trains, catch the train from Eaglescliff to get to Hartlepool, where I lived in, and I lived in Billingham, and stopped before, thank you. And we pulled in, and we got in, as I say, and as we crossed the ferry platform to get the thing pulled out, this was at that time, you know, it was the last penny train. I said, I couldn't believe it. They didn't even give us time, because we had a lot of gear with us, you know, with all our gear, suitcases and everything, you know. And I said, why didn't you hold a bloody train? I said, we thought you'd all go on. I said, we're still getting a bloody gear off the old course tank as it was there. So you had to get down at the English Street, and the Billingham Stockton. And I said, that's bloody clever. I said, what time's the next one? Oh, yeah. It's about 5 in the bloody morning, and we're stuck in the middle of bloody nowhere. We had the clue, you know, that we had trained to that run. I said, well, that's bloody clever. So I said, well, leave that bloody waiting room open. We'll get in there. Because the kitchen was, like, you know. So we got in there. We went there and we got down. It's funny when I think back, we got our heads down, like, and by then it was about 10 o'clock. But after about a couple of hours, I thought, well, God, it was lying on that pretty hard table, you know. And I got up and said, oh, I'm going to walk around. Darby was sound asleep. So I got out and walked over on the platform and just twisted loose my legs up, like. And I looked up and there was a signal box way up the line. And I could see the flames leaping. The flames leaping over the fireplace, you know. So I thought, oh, well, I said, yeah, that's bloody rare. But so I went up and I knocked on the door, like, and I think it was City. We knocked on the middle of the night, like, you know. And I said, do you mind if I come in? I said, well, it's freezing, like, even though wouldn't be cold now, like, you know, but then, we're cold straight, more or less, cold straight from Burma, you know, the blood was steamed and everything. So, I made a cup of tea, so we made a cup of tea, I think we sat there talking about it tonight. And I said, I'm better go now and get that train at 5:30. I could still be. And they're all up and down the lanes, all the signal men looking for me. They thought I'd been walking in my sleep and been knocked down by a tree. They're walking up and down the lanes. I said, hey, what are you doing down there? What are you doing up there?
So you got your train and...
So we got the train to Billingham. I got up with Billingham, Dartley, Caddy. I've met him since, like, you know. And I got off, you never clever, like, Billingham Station then was right in the middle of the town, you know. It was like, I lived in Station Crescent, so it's just like a crescent goes off from the station. And I'm walking up the picking street from the station up into Station Crescent. And the bloody handle on my case broke. I was that wild after the night that I had to spend. I was hoping to get home and I kicked the bug and I put my foot, it was one of them cardboard cases. I put I got up and I knocked the door on the way. Couldn't believe it, like, when my father opened the door, like, you know, because I had a hammer and hammer, you know, because it was still only about 6 o'clock in the morning.
Did you have a bush hat on, or?
What? Yes, I did. I've got it there. See me? Still got it. And I hammered him up, like, and he came down the door, and he couldn't believe his eyes when he opened the door. He couldn't remember looking, he was written to say I was on the way home, anything like that, you know. And he couldn't believe his eyes. And but I was in tears myself. couldn't be any other, you know. Yeah. And I wanted to home coming out, but...
And the month that you were on leave, how was that taken up?
When I got home, you see, I hadn't realised at the time, like, but I thought, God, it'd be catastrophic. The old man, like, you know. And of course, he had a cancer thing, but he didn't know. He'd already been into Shotley Bridge Hospital. That's where they used to do all the cancer work there. And he'd been into Shotley Bridge Hospital up there. And he got himself pretty late, and I was straight up there. Oh, you know, like, you know, but I didn't know what was in my problem at the time, like, you know. And, they had told him, like, because he was living with, they had, like, a housekeeper in, a woman called Boris, maybe Boris. And she told her, like, but she hadn't told me. And I know, because right to the day he went and died, he was still saying, when I get better, I'll look after myself. Right to the day he died.
And did he die shortly after your coming home?
Well, I've had my month's leave, which I've got that, went round all stopped him, all my old phones, from some of the lads that hadn't been to water and things like that, you know. Your own prison, a few more lads like that, and John Sturdy. So, what a Kelly night out on the boat was like.
These would be men who were in key work, were they, and hadn't gone into the forces?
Yeah. They worked in a big engineering work at, you just follow the bridge on the other side of the river, the Thornaby.
And how do you obviously, you felt all right about them going through the war safe, and you...
Oh, it didn't matter. I mean, I'd been in the army before they even thought about going in the army, you know, so it meant they also made them still the same lads that I knew before I went away, weren't they, you know? I mean, the sort of lads that had been called up and that, they didn't push that, but these were lads that I'd known long since. I mean, at least I knew that were... with a reserved occupation, and that makes sense. There's no way they're going to volunteer to go into the war. So, anyway, as I say, like, my father got ready, got himself ready, and he walked right through down the town with us, right through Dillingham, you know, and they caught his corner and all this stuff. I think he's probably just going to and, he was calling me all the shops, the paper shop and the baker shop and the little echo, the not the echo, like the Billingham Gazette. He was very friendly with the manager there, like he took us in to see them, and took us up to see Father Tim's and all the, oh God, got sick. And, I'd only gone back, I've been back the month of the week. July the 10th or 12th, something like that, when my father died. So I could have only gone back there about a week, a fortnight at the most, when I was called back to me.
No, after the end of your leave, you were in about a fortnight, yeah.
After the end of my leave, yeah. By the time I finished my leave, gone back there. I'd only been down there.
Where did you go to at the end of your leave?
I went back to Woolwich.
And what were they going to do with you? What was the intention now?
I was entitled to 12 months in the company. That was my entitlement. for the time served for the service I had abroad, there was no way anybody could get me out of this country under 12 months. So that would...
That would see the rest of the war out.
It would have done.
Just Japan, Germany would be out, but Japan would be left to spring.
But having said that, anyway, I come home and I've been down there and I was just more or less brought home to death one, more or less. Now my father died, so I came home for this funeral. And when I went back, I just had three days. And I went back and the boy said, yeah, good job here. He said, I want you to go down to Boxing Gate, take a half dozen doors for you, some picks and shoes, and I want you to bring a rifle range and, down there. You give us the address to go to. So I went there, I took these three to one with the lads in the back. And went away down to Bexley Heath. And I got in there, when I got in there, there was three women working in this, they had like a clear pigeon shoot. And they were in there making ammunition for clear pigeon shoot. And working, doing other work as well. Like, he said, oh, you'll have to wait for Mr. Churchill comes in. I said, Mr. Churchill. I never thought a lot about it. And this door opens, and this little fella comes in, and he was an exact miniature Winston Churchill, only in a miniature fashion. He'd only be, well, he's smaller than me, he'd only be about 5'2", 5'3". But the same Rubicon features and everything, you know, just like a miniature Winston, because I've already met Winston on there. On a march past the Tivoli. Mm-hmm. I'd seen him anyway, I hadn't met him, but I'd seen him. And I thought, it's perfect. He said, spit miniature. And he said, mate, have you got anybody, everything settled up there? I said, yes, sir. I said, could you like to come up and show me exactly what you want to do and that, you know? So, and we all went up and we started digging. It was on the ganister underneath. Wasn't even satin, it was like a bit garrison. And so I said, right, I said, I'll get them started. He said, well, but when you get them, come down and see me in the office. So I said, right, well, give them all the tasks to get cut and start digging the fucker out, like, you know, just marking it out for them. And then I went down to the office. And he said, come in, he said, come in. Would you like a glass of whiskey? I want to see him here. So I get this glass of whiskey, coffee, and just started talking to him. And I didn't know at the time, but he was one of these ballistic men. He knew everything he was to do about ballistics. And he said, oh, an interesting man. Oh, God, there's a room to come down there every day, every day. Sit there, didn't stop all day, like, you know, we stopped all on, like, and always the time that some whiskey came out, or a cup of tea, if I wanted, like, well, I was doing whiskey.
So you got the work finished, presumably. You finished building it, did you?
Well, this fella here, as I say, I got down there and I got the job started, and then about 5 days afterwards, 5-6 years after, I was put on guard duty. And I was just telling you how much clout this fella had. I was put on guard duty. And this other bloke was sent down in charge of the work party to do the thing. Now, as soon as he got down, where Sergeant Gondry, he always never let the company here, so he's on guard duty. Take your bloody men away, sir, I don't want them. Who was on sitting there, take your bloody man away, he said. I don't want them. They'll come when Sergeant Gumbrick will come, not before. I don't want anybody else here. Who was on sitting there. and I had to come back, bring the whole dirty wagon load back to Woolwich, go and tell them they come and release me off the car duty I was on. Might have been all drinking night, so there wasn't that much left. They brought us off the car duty, put another glove on and sent us all the way back down to Bexley Heath with his place. That's how much contact that I had. And he used to tell us all these stories about going out to America, the islands and that. And oh, bloody marvellous.
So how long were you doing this work?
About 5-6 weeks. About 6 weeks that's, I was doing that. Because he wouldn't let anybody else on the job, so I was going to him sending the money. Yeah. So anyway, come to time when I finished it, like, they couldn't get us out the depot quick enough then. Because like, I'd run without a mission fortnight. Like.
So where did they send you?
So the first thing they sent me to was Belford. At the wrong side of Newcastle. Belford Hall. We got up there, and I'd seen SPs, but I never worked on them. When I got there, the regiment was full of SPs.
What regiment was this?
Sixth Royal Horse Artillery.
Oh, this is when you joined the Royal Horse Artillery?
I joined the Royal Horse Artillery. The Sixth Royal Horse Artillery. And the shoulder flash, panda's head, we had a panda's head on as a shoulder flash, panda did. And
which division was this? Do you know the number?
No, it wasn't. No. We were just on our own up there. Okay. You know, I wasn't up there as a part of the division then, anything like that, you know. So I couldn't even tell you. There would be, I mean, I can find out.
No,
I can find out quite easy, no problem, because I know a chap was got on the heads, the badge head.
Well, what you're on self-propelled guns now?
We're on the self-propelled guns now. So we got up there. And we were there about a fortnight. Then we moved all the way down to Shoreham by sea. We moved all the way down to Shoreham by sea from Belford. So we got down to Shoreham, and my brother had come home, my other brother from the East Coast. He'd come along, and I thought, well, and I wrote and asked him if he would like to come and join us in the artillery. I said, it's not very safe, right? But it's a place I'm safe for being a new big man. I said, so if you want to join us, I'll get you a transfer. Because we've both been in the same country, we'll already have a transfer, you see. So I sent away, and sure enough, he stands for a transfer, and he was posted into the same regiment. He was in M battery and I was in O battery. Man, I've just come out of bed. he was in M battery and I was in O battery.
How were you settling into regimental routine in Britain to after the years which you've been travelling away abroad?
I found it hard. I really found it hard, because now we're back to the real bullshit. It was really tough after all the times that we've been out of, even when you're out of the line, you know, they knew what you'd been through. And the treated you as such, they treated you as bloody men and that, like, they had what to be bloody flats of dummies, you know what I mean? So anyway, so we went there, and then I was sent on an SP course with Will. I had to go and do this SP course at Will. And we were, I was there 3 months, I think, about 3 months. Just doing, they did every tank that was in the British Army. I still had all the gear up there. Every tank that was in the British Army, I had to do a suit on.
On the gunnery of it, on the gunneries.
On the guns, on the guns, on all the guns, like the, you know, the 2 pounders and etc. Even the 7 pounder, even the 7 pounder anti tank guns, we did a lot. As I say, I was there 3 months, and I had a great time. There was one time coming out of the rail, as you come out. The road swings over a humpback bridge down there, and then there's a sharp right turn. Okay? And these Cromwells, which was originally the Cromwell, they used to get what you call a buckley steering on. You pull the left and then it will go right, or you pull the right and then it will go left, it just depends. But all you had to do was, if you wanted to go right, you give it an extra heave on it and it corrected itself. But if you didn't know that, and this is what happened this day, we're going out and we went to pull the right to turn right. And the bloody thing started moving left, so what they're doing down the left, bloody turn. He automatically started going the wrong way and he pulled the other one instead. We went down this bloody hill. We just short, I think, but we just up this hoping back bridge. Down this bloody hill, straight to the moon, this woman's front door. we all got out like a wind. And she's sitting there. She's only stopped about that far off, you know. And she, I've never seen anyone actually frozen with fright, but that's the old woman out there. This old lady, poor old lady, and she just had a slap on the bloody right face. She went in court to the daughter, and she's sitting there with a cup of tea in her hand, and a nice little china cup, and she was absolute stiff like that, like a board. She was sitting there, so I said, get a cup of bloody tea on quick. We've got a cup of tea on my kitchen. Got to start drinking the thing, you know.
So, you were in these converted tanks that carried the big self-propelled gun.
This was a tank.
This was an actual tank itself.
This was an actual tank. It was a Cromwell. As I say, we had to go through the whole lot. Yeah. The Cromwell's Crusaders and the Comets and every movement. And then you also had your SP. You had to do every section of tank open.
And what was the SP gun that you were training on?
The SP gun was a 25-pounder gun on a Sherman chassis. It's a Sherman built exactly the same as a Sherman tank was built, but except that you had an open top. You had a gun protruding, naturally. And you had the same armament all the way around you. Although you didn't have a turret on or anything like that. So, it was, we went through this, all these different tanks and that. We had to waterproof them all. Every tank had a different set of type of waterproofing to do on every tank. We had every tank, even the SPs, which was they were made like to come straight off the boat and straight onto the beach, you know, and which we did eventually. But we had to waterproof all them, the Comets, the Crusaders, the Cromwells.
What did you waterproof them with? How were they waterproofed?
With all the gunk that you could ever imagine. It was the filthiest bloody junk in the world. You had to have all overalls and everything going, bloody wellies on and everything. Oh, God. And I know because I was given a bloody job when I got tell later anyway. But we got this, we waterproofed all these, and then you had to drive underneath the bloody lake with them. Just to prove that your waterproofing was proficient, and they would check before you went so like, put there again. And there's a pretty big lake there. And you went on there, and you were down about 12 feet or something like that, with a snorkel, a big snorkel sticking out the top and a floating snorkel on the top for the exhaust and that to breathe and everything, you know. And then you had to drive across this lake. And you might say, well, how did you know where you were going? You worked on a compass. You took a compass bearing when you got in there. Well, I want to be over there. And you just kept on the very track that you were given, you know. And you would come up to a mile left within a yard or two of where you did.
And this was completely submerged, was it?
Oh, yes, yes.
You submerged. And you were sealed in effect.
Sealed in, nothing. There's nothing could get in there. The only air you were getting in was through this very little snorkel on the top. You get the air coming in that way and the exhaust blowing out that way. Yeah, on floating snorkels. And, I enjoyed it. The only thing that terrified me at the time, this packet would insist, and he would take it across a hill that way.
There's an angle on it, a steep angle.
And you could feel it way at the top of. And he used to be going along, along the side of this bloody mountain, and the bloody thing was lying like that, and he could feel it waiting to go over, you know. I thought, I could hit a bloody rock somewhere. but that really did terrify me. That, like, God, if it goes over here, like, no bloody chance here, because you're halfway up a bloody mountain. Yeah, and once you, but they must have had it taped, you know. So, yeah, they knew that wherever they took you, like, you know, it would give you that feeling, but you always had the feeling it was going to go, like, you know. Terrible feeling, like, actually. And I excelled myself on that course. I got a 97% pass.
And what you'd learn to fire the gun, presumably, and to work it.
Fire all the types of guns that was on the different guns. The Comet did have a 17-pound gun. The other one was a 25-pound now. And then you had a little 2-pounder on the Cromwell and the Crusader. And so you'd learn to fire all the guns and waterproof them all. And it was a very extensive course, like, you know. And when I completed the course, he had a written test, a theoretical test, and a visual test, like, forever, you know. And this girl said to me, like, he says, how would you like to become an instructor here? Oh, I said, I'd prefer to be back on the regiment. Yeah. No, he said, there's a vacancy here for you. He says, we've never had anybody with a pass as high as that, ever. He said, we've never, ever had a pass as high as that, ever. He says, we'd love you to stop and be an instructor here. And I thought, you'd have to, you know, I thought we said, there is no bloody way I want to be here. That's God's honest truth, you know. There's no way that I wanted to be in Devils. A very description, if I could avoid it, you know what I mean? So I said, no, sir. I said, no. I said, thank you very much for the offer, sir. But that's it. No, I said, I was rather be back with my friends in the regiment, sir. And look, I said, back to the fact, I said, I'm looking forward to going overseas. I said, as and when it becomes available, like I said, I'm looking forward to it. good luck there. I mean, he said, the office still stands, you know, if you want it. I said, no, sir. I thought, fuck it off. Don't entice me to stop me.